Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, I'm Callum Stoneman, and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. Tech Talk is our chance to get together each week and see what's going on in the world of technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. And it's your show. We'd love to hear from you. So if you've got any thoughts, comments, questions, anything you want to share with us, get in touch. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Emails and voice messages, all welcome. Coming up this week, we'll have even more reports from the CSUN Assistive Technology Conference in California. And we'll also be hearing from Connor Scott-Gardner, who has got some travel tips and hacks for us to help your travel plans run a little bit smoothly. Joining me this week, regular co-host Hubert Pavalkovich. How's it going?
Not going too bad, Callum. Not too bad. Talking of tech, let me tell you quickly about something I found with Be My Eyes. So we've talked about this app quite a bit on Tech Talk multiple times. They are now trying to tackle what I think is quite a big issue. If you're like me and sometimes need to contact certain organizations, but for love or money, you can't actually find their contact details because not all of them make it that easy. Well, Be My Eyes are trying to tackle this problem. They are launching, and so far this is only for beta testers, they are launching a service directory where they have hundreds of companies and you can contact them through the app, which I think is pretty good. I've seen glimpses of that. So on my app, I'm not a beta tester, but what I have in the Get Support tab is a lot more companies being displayed, but it will actually be looking a bit different according to beta testers. But yeah, that is a very good development, I think, in Be My Eyes.
Yeah, this is really nice. So just to kind of clarify what's going on here, or at least as far as I understand it, because yeah, similar to what they did with Be My AI, they're rolling this out quite slowly, you know, and making sure that it's working properly and, you know, just doing a slow kind of beta rollout for now, because as you said, they're trying to get hundreds of companies involved. I think they said about 600 companies, is it, that they're starting with?
Mm-hmm. Which is quite a lot, to be fair, for a starting point.
Yeah. Mm. And it's going to be a bit different because I think one of the problems with the, well, not problems, but one of the things with specialized help is that I get a lot of like companies pop up who are, they're listed there, but they might be like based in the US, for example. So they're not really relevant to the UK. Whereas what they're doing with the service directory is making it kind of relevant to where you are in the world as well, which is nice.
Yeah, which I think is really good. I think that way you can access the services in near your location and make sure that when you speak to someone, they'll actually have the relevant information for you rather than contacting someone. They're going, we're not in the UK. We can't really help you as much as, you know. So I think that's also quite a welcome addition.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is welcome because so what they're doing here, because you've got the specialized help, which is the companies where you can call them via Be My Eyes, you know, on a video call. And in the case of Microsoft, you've got their Be My AI, you know, disability answer desk thing as well. But then what they're also doing with the service directory, just to be clear on this, these are companies who are not necessarily on Be My Eyes, but they're basically making it easier to make a call to those companies via the app. So you're not making a call. You're essentially, if the company itself isn't on Be My Eyes, but they are in the service directory, then what you're basically doing is it will just take you out to a normal phone call, meaning that you don't have to go through that hassle of trying to Google for a phone number and find a website. And then there's always the challenges of the website being inaccessible. And then, you know, usually they're trying to push you towards chatbots, which are getting better. But let's be honest, unless they've put some kind of ChatGPT or some kind of AI in there, they're still pretty terrible.
Yeah, my experience of chatbots can be variable, really, because you're looking at it. And sometimes if your problem is really specific, chatbot just can't deal with it. But what I'm seeing here in Be My Eyes is they are slowly becoming an ultimate external support hub for people where you've got different ways of getting support with whatever you need. You've got you know, your volunteers, you've got Be My AI, you've got the other specialist companies, now you've got this service directory. It's almost making it into an app that if you need help externally from somebody, this app is what you can actually use. And even with the friends and family groups as well, it's kind of becoming an ultimate one go-to hub for support.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and I'm really liking it. The only problem that I have is I keep forgetting to use it. Like, I'm just so used to Googling for a phone number. I'm having to kind of consciously think, oh, actually, I'll check the service directory, see if they're in there.
Yeah, well, my Be My Eyes is hidden in my utilities folder on my phone on like the third page or something. So I often forget that I actually have that app. And I get this with some apps on the phone where I actually forget I have them because they are in folders. So as much as I'm organized, but it does mean that some apps just get forgotten to be used, even though they actually could be quite helpful.
Yeah, you need to sort that out. Put it on your dock. Put it in the bottom in the bottom corner. Well, are you on the beta list for the service directory? Have you tried it? Let us know your thoughts. Do get in touch. As I said before, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. No Dave Williams this week. If you were listening last week, you'll have heard that conversation with that he had with Stevie Wonder while he was at CSUN. And I've not heard from him since. I think he's realised that he's too cool for us now. You know, he's got friends in better places.
Stevie Wonder's taken him.
No. Now, Dave's taking a bit of well-earned leave after his travels, but we will be hearing from him in a second because, as I said, there's more coming up from CSUN this week. We've got so much that we couldn't cram it all into last week's show. So without further rambling from us, let's get into it. This is Tech Talk.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. We're at CSUN with Saqib Shaikh from Microsoft. Saqib is the lead and founder of the very popular Seeing AI app that's been around for 7 years, available on iOS and Android now for recognizing objects and information about the environment around us. Fantastic to be with you, Saqib.
Hi, thank you very much.
It's been an amazing week.
Oh, it's been incredible. I just love being here and seeing the innovation that's going on and meeting all the old and new friends alike.
So I know something that you have been asked about time and time and time again over the history of Seeing AI is, can we have a way to use Seeing AI hands-free?
My goodness, so many times.
Well, talk about that then. So what's that journey been like? Have you tried things that haven't worked? Or where did you kind of get to with that conversation?
Yeah, so like since day one, the very first vision, you know, could you have something that has a camera on it that maybe you wear? But, you know, we've talked to dozens of manufacturers, thought of different things. But it's not just the technology. It's the getting it into people's hands. How are you going to manufacture this at scale, at the right price? Get it into people's hands where they are around the world. And then, you know, if things go wrong, how do we make sure you have the good support? And really, the right combination of things did not come into play until very recently.
So just let's talk about that then. So what is that combination and what are we sharing today?
Yeah, this week at CSUN, we have announced a pilot program where Microsoft on the Seeing AI app plus a company called ARX, A-R-X, and RNIB are partnering to bring a wearable to Seeing AI.
So ARX Vision have produced a wearable camera. So it's a headset, feels like sort of bone conduction headphones, a bit like the kind that, you know, people use for exercise to free their ears so they can still hear the people in the environment around. Why was that an important requirement, do you think?
Yeah, it's essential that if you're going to have headphones on while you're navigating around your life, you don't want it to block out the external audio. So the bone conduction means that they're not covering your ears. Yeah.
And let's talk about the camera. So it's the camera module is mounted on the right hand side. It's a Sony sensor, I believe, and there are some tactile buttons there.
Yeah, so the whole thing, if you imagine, it's going round the back of your head, over your ears, and then the bone conduction bits is just in front of your ears. And on the left side, you have volume buttons, but on the right side, you have this little rectangle, which is the camera, with three buttons, a triangle, square, and circle, and you can use that to control all of Seeing AI. So you would plug this into an Android phone, it has to be Android right now, and then you can put your phone in your pocket. It's like, you know, just having a battery pack or something. Just forget it's there. And use these three buttons to control everything.
Okay, and let's just talk about some of the things there. You know, I mean, I can't believe there's anyone listening who hasn't heard of Seeing AI, but so we've got a number of services or channels, if you will, in Seeing AI. Just run through those, if you would, and talk about what some of those interactions would be like using the wearable camera.
Yeah, so the different channels that you have on Seeing AI on your phone come to ARCs for the most part, and they can be for reading things in real time or reading a whole document in detail. It might be for just taking a photo and knowing what's in front of you. And then we have these new really, really rich descriptions which will go like give you a whole paragraph about what's in front of you down incredible detail. If you haven't tried it, you should. But you can also now talk to Seeing AI. So on the phone, you tap Ask Seeing AI, but on the headset, you can just press a button, and whether it's a document or what's in front of you, you can say on a menu, how much does the lasagna cost, or what vegetarian options are there, or and so on and so forth. You can basically talk to Seeing AI now.
And you've got both your hands free at this point. You know, you might be using a cane or a guide dog, but you might be manipulating the object that you're attempting to scan.
Exactly. That's really important because some things are just tricky, especially, as you say, if you have things in your hands like your cane. And if you're scanning a product, reading text, you just have to look in the right direction now.
And of course, if you're using ARCs AI, as Seeing AI continues to evolve, you're going to benefit from those changes. So if you add more channels in the future and more capabilities, more smarts, then this is going to work.
Absolutely, and that's the great thing about this, that at the end of the day, it's still a phone, it's still an app that gets updated, the app that we are working on every day here at Microsoft. And, you know, this is just a pilot, so for the first users who buy the ARCs headset, you will have to sign up and we'll get you a special version that works with ARCs. But that means that also you can be a part of this journey. Right now, what you get with ARCs is exactly the same as you get on the phone, but together with the community, we're looking forward to running this pilot, and if someone's interested, they can be part of this community of people contributing ideas and feedback to create these hands-free natural experiences.
Absolutely. If you're up for it, we would love to hear from you. Get involved, and you can find out more from ARCs Vision. We're in the United States, where you would go to buyarcs.com, but in the UK, ARCs AI is available from RNIB's Products for Life store. Finally, Saqib, just more broadly, what does it mean for you and an organization like Microsoft to work with RNIB on a project like this?
It's incredible because RNIB in the UK is a trusted name, people know, and it really helps us come to our customers where they are. Many people know about Seeing AI, and that's great. Remember, go to seeingai.com and download it if you haven't. But the RNIB can really reach people that maybe, you know, aren't all on the internet all the time, aren't reading all the blogs and the podcasts. So this is absolutely essential for us.
Saqib Sheikh, founder and leader of Seeing AI at Microsoft, thank you so much for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
No, thank you so much.
Thank you very much to Dave Williams there, and we will have more from Dave from California and the CSUN conference a bit later on in the show.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Now, obviously, as your eyesight changes, you need to find new ways to get out and about. Learning to use a long cane or work with a guide dog are an important part of independent travel for those of us who are blind or partially sighted. But what about technology? How can technology be useful rather than a distraction? Where does technology add value when it comes to planning, navigating, and capturing our experiences when traveling as an independent blind person? Well, somebody who has done lots of that very recently is Connor Scott-Gardner. And Connor joins us now. Welcome into RNIB Connect Radio. You recently went to New York on your own.
Yes, I did. I went to New York for around 10 days, and it was a trip that I planned myself, and I did go by myself and spent most of the time by myself while I was there.
And just to be clear for listeners, you're totally blind. You identify as a blind person.
Yeah, I have light perception, but I don't see colors or shapes or anything like that. So I would say, in terms of travel, really no functional, useful vision.
Right. And you're a long cane user as well.
Yes, I am.
Right. So why did you want to go to New York on your own? Why wouldn't you just sort of find a mate and say, right, come on, let's do this together? Wouldn't that just be so much easier?
I think traveling with people can be really fun, and I've traveled with people before. I went to a music festival in Texas last year, and I went with a friend, and that was an amazing experience. I think, though, ultimately, when you travel with people, there's a lot of requirements you have to meet. You have to find someone who has the same holiday availability as you. You have to find someone who wants to spend the same amount of money as you. You have to find someone who wants to do some of the same things as you. And sometimes that works out, and sometimes it doesn't. And I also think that for myself, I'm quite an introverted person. I really enjoy spending a lot of time by myself. And so actually, I enjoy solo travel a lot. I gain a lot from it. And it's something that I really value. And I, for a long time, didn't really think I could do that. And then when I kind of realized I could, and when I realized that actually there were ways around it to travel as a blind person, I discovered that actually, being blind doesn't mean I have to travel with someone.
Okay, and you've written quite extensively about some of those ways, and we'll come back to that a little bit later. Let's just focus on your use of technology and how technology added value to your trip and how you got that balance right in terms of using your cane and using the technology. So let's start with the kind of the planning stage. So presumably you did quite a bit of research online.
I would love to say I've done a lot of research. I actually, what happened was last year, I basically paid too much tax, and HMRC gave me some money back. And instead of saving it, I was like, oh, I'm turning 30, so let's go on holiday. And I booked a plane ticket to New York. So that was what I did. And I can't really tell you why I decided New York. It was somewhere I'd never been. I traveled to the US before. I'd lived in the US before. And New York seemed really exciting, and I was drawn in by the theater and things like that. I did small amount of research online, less than I normally do, but in terms of, for example, planning my flights and hotels, I used the Expedia app. I pretty much use that all the time for flights and hotels, and there's a few reasons for that. Firstly, the app is fully accessible if you're a voiceover user, and I would assume with low vision as well. The website is also pretty accessible, particularly when you compare it with most booking sites for flights and hotels. You can also get Expedia points when you book through them. So there's an element of a loyalty program, and you can link it with your existing loyalty programs, like, for example, British Airways, so for collecting Avios. So I always use the Expedia app. So that is a piece of technology that feels really fundamental now to me when I travel. Then, in terms of actually planning what I would do when I was there, I just kind of went on Google and looked at different things. I did find this amazing website where guides to using the subway in New York, which is kind of like the tube in London. And whilst this guide wasn't written for blind people, the person who wrote it obviously has an awareness of accessibility because he used alt text, so wrote image descriptions for any photos and really described it in detail. So I looked up as much information as I could closer to the time. And yeah, I mean, that was mostly what I did at the planning stage.
And were you looking for any additional accessible resources or support? So when you were looking at, you said theatre was one of the things, for example, that drew you to go into New York. Were you looking for audio described performances specifically?
So I did. I also found the information kind of hard to find. However, I did stumble across some information about an app called Gala Pro. And what that app is it basically, theatres can choose to implement the system or not, and then it provides pre-recorded audio description. So rather than having someone live in the building describing, it means that you'll get an element of audio description for every performance. So there were some shows that I planned specifically because the theatre had partnered with that service. So I thought, oh, well, that's really interesting. I've never tried pre-recorded audio description before, but also, I just thought, okay, it would be nice to have some audio description for shows. But then others, I sort of thought, oh, well, I'll give it a go without and see what happens.
Did you tell the airline and your hotel, a blind person on the way might need some assistance?
I did tell the airline, honestly, partly because if you disclose a disability, you often get to reserve a seat and they will assist you with seat reservation, which is kind of useful, particularly if you want a window seat, which I definitely did. Whether I accept assistance in airports is hit and miss or not. I prefer not to be honest. However, I also think that staff in airports are so grabby and so insistent that you should have assistance. Sometimes it's just easier to grit your teeth and accept it. I think Heathrow is a dreadful airport. I think their staff are generally really badly trained. And I loathe to criticise the staff because they're probably underpaid and not trained enough. Management are really at fault. But I tend to accept assistance in Heathrow, even though I know the assistance is going to be bad, because I know that not accepting it is just going to become a massive headache. Whereas if I'm flying from somewhere like Manchester, I've had pretty good success in not taking assistance. So I did actually disclose my disability to the airline, but I didn't to the hotel. I didn't think it was particularly necessary, to be honest. And what I didn't want is for them to start panicking and making lots of assumptions in advance of my arrival.
Did you use any tech to navigate in the airport?
So I used Aira a couple of times, which is a service where you can get access to what we'd call visual interpreters. So they're basically people who are trained to offer assistance and to describe things. And so there were a couple of times when, for example, I asked to be dropped off at one of the lounges rather than go straight to my gate. And so I used Aira to kind of ask, you know, the visual interpreter, oh, can you just describe what's around me and the layout of the environment? So I did use that technology, yes.
Mm. I always find airport security very interested in my Braille devices because obviously they don't recognise them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So you obviously managed to board your flight. Did you try and use any of the in-flight entertainment or did you just take your own entertainment?
To be honest, I didn't bother because whilst I know that some airlines now have accessible in-flight entertainment, I'm not actually completely clear on which ones do and which ones don't. And I already had books and things downloaded to my phone, so I was like, oh, I'll just use that. It's just easier.
Mm. So what happened when you got to New York?
So at the airport, I did accept assistance to find my bag, though actually I was able to find my bag a little bit easier than my assistants because I'd put an AirTag in it. So I could say, well, my bag is definitely here and kind of use the tracking to find that, which was good. And then I got an Uber, or actually I didn't get an Uber, sorry. I got a taxi from the airport to the hotel. And the reason I got a taxi was I checked Uber prices, but in New York, there's a fixed fee for taxis from the airport. So it was actually cheaper to do that. So I did take a taxi. Interestingly, in New York taxis, although you pay using a touchscreen tablet, it does have accessibility features built in, and when you get into the car it will start announcing, oh, if you need accessibility mode, do this. And so you can actually activate this mode, and it's not particularly advanced, but it is enough to read the meter and to then pay, which I thought was kind of cool.
With the baggage, I in the past have taken a photograph of my suitcase.
Yeah,
so if you end up being assisted by somebody for whom English might not be their first language, and maybe you don't speak their language, you can at least show them the photo of your suitcase, and that can be helpful at the baggage carousel.
I think even, like, for example, my suitcase is kind of a bluey green colour, and so describing the exact nuances of it is actually easier just to show someone.
Okay. How did you find the hotel? I mean, it's the usual thing, isn't it? You get into a hotel room and there's loads of print everywhere and you spend the first half an hour scanning some of it.
Yeah. So I was relieved to find out that the thermostat was not a touchscreen. It had buttons, so I could turn my hotel room down to the Arctic. I love it to be absolutely freezing cold because I'm really weird. I use apps like Seeing AI if I'm just reading kind of printed leaflets and things like that to get an idea of what everything is. I did actually use Be My AI when I was figuring out the coffee maker, just because it only had three buttons. So I was like, well, let's see if it can tell me what these buttons are. So I took a photo of it and got it to describe that. So I was able to figure that one out, which was kind of cool. The really nice thing about my hotel is it was actually a very tall, very narrow building. And so each floor only had four hotel rooms on it. And they did have Braille on the doors as well, which I thought was amazingly easy to navigate as a blind person, because normally you're in these hotels that are absolutely massive with corridors all over the place. So for the building to be really tall and thin actually worked out really well. So it was kind of accidentally great planning on my part.
I stayed in a hotel recently in Belfast. They didn't have Braille, but they had tactile print, which is also useful for small amounts of information.
Exactly.
So sometimes it's worth just asking about that, or just having an explore of the wall and the door just to see if you can find that. And so how was that then going out and about the first time? Just talk us through that and what role technology played when you hit the street.
So I used Google Maps. I used Google Maps over Apple Maps for no particular reason other than I've been using Google Maps for years and years and years, and I know how it works in and out. And what I would say is you've just got to find whichever mapping app you personally like and works for you. Everyone's going to feel differently. I don't think there is a right or wrong answer. And what I did was I pulled up some walking directions to a coffee place just to get myself started. And then when I went outside the hotel, I used the compass app on my phone just to figure out which direction I was facing, so then I could start off following those map directions correctly. And so basically I just set off using Google Maps and kind of my knowledge of the compass and directions. And that's really how I started off. Later on in the trip, I did actually download Voice Vista, which if anyone had used Soundscapes back in the day, is kind of similar to that. It's the technology's been, you know, repurposed and kept up to date. So what I liked about that is in conjunction with Google Maps, what it would do would be to announce the intersections on the streets. And so I thought that was really, really useful just to know which crossings were coming up, which obviously just added a little bit to my mapping. And then I think the hardest part of the journey is always the last minute when, you know, Maps tells you you're 100 feet away and you're like, oh, great. Okay, now I've got to find the door to this place. Especially in New York, where actually your map may be telling you you're 100 feet away, but you could be closer or further away because it's such a built-up city. Actually, GPS gets thrown off quite a lot. And that's the same for anyone, blind or sighted, you know, if you're following the map. So I think you need to be aware of that and kind of compensate. So what I would do was I would use apps like Seeing AI to maybe read posters in the windows. And then I would just ask people, you know, there was one time where I knew I was close to somewhere and I just asked a random passerby, oh, can you tell me where this restaurant is? And they were more than happy to help. And I think that's the reality that most people actually will, if you quickly ask them. I don't think most people mind. And particularly in a big city like New York, they're used to tourists.
Just talk us through the mechanics of, you've got the apps running on your phone, you're using an iPhone, and have you got bone conduction headphones or AirPods, or how are you doing that? And how are you getting the balance between the technology and your core mobility skills, right? Because obviously you're in an unfamiliar environment, you've got safety issues to consider, other pedestrians, traffic, all of that, you're trying to use your cane, and you've got technology talking to you. Just tell us about that.
So I think the reality is the technology is actually not telling you that much. You know, it may say, like, turn left onto Fifth Avenue, and you turn left, and you're like, right. And then it would say, you know, in 0.2 miles, turn right onto West 42nd Street. And so you know that for the next 0.2 miles, you're just walking down Fifth Avenue, and then you turned left onto Fifth Avenue, so that means you're going to have to cross it to make a right-hand turning. So really for that stretch where you're just walking, I would just have my phone in my hand, or sometimes in my pocket, to be honest, and I'd have the screen locked, and occasionally I'd just check it to see, because it will show you how much closer you're getting to that turning. If I had Soundscapes, I'm sorry, Voice Vista, I don't know why I said Soundscapes, well, because it was built on it. If I had Voice Vista on, I would have my phone in my hand, again, locked. I wouldn't really be interacting with it. It would just be announcing the upcoming intersections so I could then count them down. And, you know, mostly what I was using was my cane and my travel skills. So you'd reach a crossing, I'd stop and I'd listen for the traffic, I'd cross. And there was a lot of construction. So a lot of the time you'd cross the street and you'd find construction. It's like, okay, I don't know if I need to go right or left to navigate this construction. So I'm going to go right, have a quick look. If I can't find a path, I'm going to duck back and go left. And it's just about using your skills and being logical and thinking, well, if there's construction blocking my way, realistically, there is going to be a way around it. I may not know if that way is right or left, but I'm going to have to pick one. And the one I pick may be wrong, and that may upset a whole lot of sighted people. And either they're going to come in and want to assist me and I'm going to accept that assistance, or I'm going to say, actually, I'm okay. I'm just exploring. I'm perfectly safe, and hope that they then step away. So I think it is just, you've got to use your common sense.
So you're just using the speaker in your phone then to hear what the apps are saying to you?
Yeah, mostly. I don't dislike bone conduction headphones, but I do find the lag on the Bluetooth can be a bit frustrating as a voiceover user. The issue with AirPods is sometimes I'll put an AirPod in, particularly if I'm traveling quiet residential streets. I don't particularly like to, because even with transparency mode, you know, you've still got something in your ear. It still affects hearing all those echoes and things like that. So, yeah, I haven't really found a perfect solution.
Yeah, because even with bone conduction headphones, right, there's a sort of distraction factor there as well, isn't there? That you are wearing something, you've got something talking pretty close to your ear. So, interesting. So you were able to hear the speaker from your phone over the New York traffic?
I had to have it pretty loud, though. yeah, it was definitely challenging at times. And New York is a very loud city. And so I do think, I know someone has invested in like a very, very small speaker that they clip onto their jumper. And it is a really, really tiny Bluetooth speaker, which they use for travel. And I think I may look at something like that.
Yeah, I've got one. I think it's called a Polk Boom Bit. I'm not sure if you can get it anymore. And it's about the size of a pager. And it has sort of slightly kind of rubberized buttons. And then you can clip it to, if you're carrying, you know, like a backpack, you can clip it to the strap of your backpack over your shoulder. So the speaker's a little bit near. And you haven't got the potential
of your phone
security risk of having your phone out. Yeah, because blind people have had their phone snatched, right? Mm. I mean, sighted people. I mean, people, it happens to people all the time. Sometimes, you know, the thing is cyclists sometimes, you know, will go past
the phone,
you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what did you do with the attractions then, and venues and going into places? Was there a role for technology, you know, in the theatre or any of the other attractions that you visited?
So in the theatre, the Gala Pro app, you actually just download to your phone. I actually discovered I couldn't use it on my phone because you do need wired headphones, and I only have my AirPods with me. That was just one of those things I discovered. The good thing is the theatres will also have these little boxes with their own headphones, you know, and you just use this little device to get the audio description. So if you can't use your phone for whatever reason, there is a backup, so that was good. So I would have used my phone normally, though. Also, this app does provide captions as well, and I did discover that the captions can be read with voiceover. So if you're someone who's maybe hearing impaired as well as visually impaired, you could actually use it with a braille display, and while you wouldn't necessarily get the audio description, or you could have the audio description coming in through a headphone and then reading the captions with a braille display. So I thought that was quite interesting, just a discovery I made. At museums, I actually arranged tours of the museums with people who worked there, so I didn't really need to use technology. But in the past, I have used technology to navigate museums and, you know, take pictures of things and that, all that kind of thing. I would say actually technology was the biggest part in terms of mapping and things like that. But a lot of the time I was just kind of using my own initiative, really, which is great. Mm. You need that combination. I think you cannot rely on technology completely. You need to have good travel skills as well.
The Intrepid Museum is fantastic. I believe you visited.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I highly recommend it.
Yeah, and the team there are fantastic as well in terms of giving you access to the exhibits, and they've got plenty of things to touch. And
I've got lots and lots of models of the ships and the planes, and so you know you can touch the real plane, but for example, the ship is absolutely enormous. So they've got a model to show to when they're describing things, you've actually felt that tactile model and know what they're referring to, which is really good.
As well as sort of the planning and navigation bits, then did you document or photograph your adventures to any extent?
I did. I didn't take as much pictures as I normally do. I think I was so busy and I kind of forgot a lot of the time, but I did take pictures. Sometimes I would get people to take pictures of me. For example, when I was at the museums, I got the staff to take pictures of me. Other times I took pictures myself. Obviously, it's hit and miss as a completely blind person taking photos. I think you just have to go for it. And then I use apps like Be My AI to kind of get an idea of what's in the photos. And you learn how to ask it questions to pull out information. I documented it by taking short videos. Again, not great quality videos. My focus was on documenting my experience rather than creating this beautiful video that's designed for people to be like, oh, wow, isn't that fantastic? You know, it was more about my raw experiences than anything else. And then I kept a journal when I was there, which I used a journaling app that's built into iOS. And I actually wrote every day because I really wanted to document my trip and I didn't want to forget anything. And I'm hoping to kind of use those journals that I wrote to write blog posts about the different exhibits and things I went to.
What questions would you suggest asking Be My AI to check a photograph?
I would say, at what angle is the photo taken? I would say, is this an aesthetically pleasing photo? Obviously, that's really subjective, but you'd be surprised what you can get out of it. I would say, what is in the foreground versus the background? So you get kind of an idea. And sometimes it may, you know, give you a nice description. Then you say, oh, is there anything unusual in the photo? And they may say, oh, yeah, there's a, you know, Diet Coke can blowing around. So it's one of those things that I think just ask lots of different questions. You could also say, is this photo framed well for social media? Again, look, I'm not saying this technology is perfect. You have to understand that sometimes it completely manufactures details. It once said I was wearing glasses. I know I wasn't wearing glasses. So I said, are you sure the person's wearing glasses? And it said, oh, actually, no, they're not. So I think, you know, you can't rely on it being perfect. It isn't a human being. It may be written in a way that makes us feel like it's human, but it's not. It's not a human. And so I think, you know, be wise when you use it.
And the folks at Aira will help with cropping photos, I discovered recently. I needed to upload an image of something, and I'd taken the photo, but I'd no idea whether it was filling the frame. So I had a chat with Aira, and they were able to crop that for me.
Yes, they will. And often if you connect with an agent and you say, well, I've got some photos to send to you, what I've done before, I once had like 60 photos to be described. And so I actually selected them all, made an iCloud link, emailed the agent the iCloud link. And I was on a call with them for, you know, about half an hour or more as they were writing out these descriptions. And you know, we chatted at the same time and they said, oh, look, you know, some of the photos are the same. Do you want me to rewrite the description? I said, no, you can just write same as above. And if there were like four of the same thing, you know, write, oh, third one, best photo, for example, so that I could get kind of all that information. So yeah, and they will do that. And then what they did was they wrote the descriptions in order and then just sent me back a text file with those descriptions. Although they said they could also download the photos and then label them and re-upload them. So whatever you want them to do. So that is something else they can do as well.
Brilliant. Well, it sounds like you had an incredible trip with lots of memories and certainly lots of use of technology. Imagine, you know, being James Holman or somebody, you know, 100 years or more ago, and not having any of this technology to support independent travel. You've written a guide. It's not just about technology. It's a guide for blind solo travelers. Lots of tips about navigating airports and hotels and getting out and about, and some of which we've touched on today. Just tell us a bit about the guide and where listeners can find that.
I wrote this guide because I realized that I traveled a lot and I've gained a lot of experience and I'm always learning new things. Every time I travel, I have something else that I've learned that I then implement in future. And so I wrote this guide and I divided it up into all sorts of different sections. There's sections on planning, there's sections on how you navigate a hotel, there's sections on how you navigate unfamiliar cities, staying safe, all kinds of things. And it's on my personal blog, which is catchthesewords.com. So if you go there, you can find it. I'm also, you know, taking other tips and feedback from the community. Someone recommended a great website for looking up train routes in Europe, for example. So I've implemented that into the guide. So it is very much a living document and I don't want it just to be me. I'm taking, you know, like I said, tips from the community, and then I'm adding a small section at the bottom where I kind of credit people who have contributed to the guide. So, you know, people will kind of be credited for their contributions as well. I want it to be a document that we build together and that will hopefully enable people to feel like they can start traveling if maybe they're just not sure where to start.
There you go. Go and read Connor's guide, our guide, the community's guide at catchthesewords.com. Connor Scott Gardner, traveller, writer, thank you for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
You might remember last year here on Tech Talk, we covered the IRA service being trialled in certain Thames Link stations. I believe we spoke to some people from Stevenage Station where it was being trialled. That trial has now been expanded to some more stations across the Thames Link network. And Hubert Pavalkovich went to Sutton Railway Station to find out how the trial is going there.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio and we are here at Sutton Station looking at further IRA trials for blind and partially sighted rail passengers. Joining me here from Thomas Pocklington Trust, who have been working with Go Via Thameslink on this project, is the Sightloss Council Engagement Manager for the South East, Dave Smith. Dave, welcome to Connect Radio.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about, first of all, these IRA trials are a part of a much bigger project that Thomas Pocklington Trust is doing with the public transport and the Sightloss Councils. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. So this is just one thing that we're doing across the transport network. We're working over the next 3 years, trying to improve public transport for blind and partially sighted people, particularly around trains and buses. And the IRA trial is just one of the projects that we're working on, in particular down here in the southeast.
Now, these trials have now expanded to further 8 stations following the success of last year. Can you tell us a bit more about how you feel the trials have gone in general in between all of the stations that are supporting it at the moment?
Yeah, the feedback we've had has been quite positive. We're looking for more blind and partially sighted people to use the IRA and give their feedback on how it's working. The initial launch was back in June at 4 key stations on the Govia network, and this expansion is to try and enhance and improve access for more blind and partially sighted people to use their services and their train stations to get on the rail network.
Have you used IRA yourself within a train station?
Yes, I have. I'm blind, so I've used IRA many times. I tend to use it generally at Brighton Station because that's where I travel to lots. And my experience of the service has been exceptional, really. It's just makes travelling independently really, really good. You know, going in or out of the station, you can just hook onto the IRA service and get support with wherever you're going. And that might be heading, you know, to the accessible loo or grabbing a coffee or just getting out to the bus stop or to a taxi.
How did you find the consistency of the IRA service? You've said you've been using it, you know, for a while now consistently. Do you think the service of the IRA agents has been consistently good?
I do. They're all trained agents. So as soon as you connect to a call, they know where you are, so they can then quickly jump onto a map, and they have maps of the train stations that are in within the service that is currently being offered. So they can then pinpoint you and guide you that way. They can also connect via your camera, so they can see where you are and use your camera to navigate you to where you need to go.
Coming from your own Sightloss Council volunteers that you manage, what's the feedback you've received from their use of the app, whether it's at Sutton train station where we are today to, you know, other locations?
So I cover the southeast as part of my role. So my volunteers are based down in the southeast. So Brighton is the station that's got the IRA service at the moment, but with this expansion, it's Eastbourne and Chichester. So, but the experience that I've heard from my volunteers that have used it at Brighton is that it's very good. It's a very busy station. It's got a big, wide concourse and an open expanse outside. So, getting access from the bus stop and being able to connect to IRA and be walked across the concourse into the station to a member of staff is a really good service and one that really, really supports independent travel.
Going back to using IRA with a mobility aid, how do you find, you know, having a mobility aid in one hand, let's say, and using IRA in the other? How do you find that experience, or have you had any feedback from your volunteers on that particular aspect?
Positive and negative feedback. On the whole, it's been positive. You know, you hold a phone up at your chest, so it's kind of tucked in at your chest, so just the camera is showing outwards. And then most people like to use it through earphones, so you can have the agent straight into your ears rather than trying to do it through a loudspeaker, which, you know, can be quite hard to hear in a noisy environment in particular. So I think on the whole, that's been okay. I think that the problem, if there is a problem, is when you've got a bag of shopping and you've got a guide dog or a mobility cane, then you almost need a third hand to carry your phone. But there are carriers and harnesses that you can use, you know, if you so choose. But on the whole, most people have just got on and used it, and there's been no problem.
If there are people who are, you know, apprehensive to use this technology, or people who genuinely haven't used it yet, what would be your message to them to encourage them to try the app at various supported stations?
Our message would definitely be go out and try it. You know, certainly it's the idea is to make transport accessible. And this is just one solution that Govia are trialling to try and help blind and partially sighted people get out and about and be independent, just like a sighted person. It's a very, very good service. It's free of charge, other than, you know, your data charges on your own phone, which are quite minimal nowadays. So, you know, go and try it.
And could you also share some hopes for the future of hopefully this project and your future work to make public transport more accessible that Thomas Pocklington Trust is doing?
Yeah, I guess our long-term goal would be to make public service, public transport accessible to all blind and partially sighted people, and therefore there to be a consistent service across the country as well. Our hope is that this expansion will continue and it will go out across all of the Govia network, and hopefully other train operators will realise that this is a good app and, you know, maybe adopt it for their services too. But from a Sight Loss Council and Thomas Pocklington Trust point of view, it is only one navigating app. There are others available and are being tested by other train operating companies, and it's just finding the best solution for the scenario that we're in.
Fantastic. Dave Smith, Engagement Manager for the South East from Thomas Pocklington Trust, thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
We'll return now to Dave Williams from the CSUN Assistive Technology Conference in California.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Now, one of the talks of the town here at CSUN 2024 this week, and one of the busier booths, I think, has to be Glidance. And we're joined by Amos, who's the founder and CEO at Glidance. Welcome into RNIB Connect Radio. For folk in the UK, just explain, what is Glidance?
Thank you very much, David. So I'm Amos Miller, and Glidance is the name of the company. And we are building Glide. And Glide is a new mobility aid that uses self-driving technology to guide the way. And the idea is that it's a long handle, two wheels on the ground. You hold the handle, you nudge it forward, and then Glide starts to steer the way. The wheels steer a bit left, a bit to the right, takes you around an obstacle, keeps you on the safe path, and guides you all the way to your destination. where it uses cameras and radars and autonomous driving technology to do its magic.
But it's not pulling you, right?
The wheels are not motorized. You nudge it forward, you push it forward, and as you do, the wheels start to steer the way. And really the goal there is to give the user complete agency on the speed and what they want to do. You can also direct the device in which direction you want to go, and it'll keep you safe and avoiding obstacles.
Right. Can you just give us a brief physical description of the unit?
So you would hold the handle around waist level. It's not dissimilar to where you would be holding a guide dog handle, probably a little bit more in front. And then the handle goes at a 45 degree down in front of your foot, and that's where the wheels are. The wheels are, the base unit is about 8 inches wide, and the wheels are on both sides of the base unit. And along the front of the device, there are a bunch of radars and sensors that give the device a view of the immediate surroundings around the device. And then at the handle, there's a wide-angle camera that gets a good view of the front of the of everything that's going on in front, and the glide uses those two inputs to steer, basically, to figure out the environment, plan a path, and steer the user on that path.
Can you just explain the problems that Glide aims to solve? I'm a long cane user. My wife is a guide dog user.
I'm a guide dog user myself, so I'm blind. I have retinitis pigmentosa and lost my sight in my 20s. I have always used a guide dog. I have Boots, is my guide dog. I actually got my first few guide dogs in the UK, where I lived for many, many years. I also developed Soundscape, which is one of the navigation apps that people use. I developed that while I was at Microsoft. And one of the things that I really started to understand is that we develop these really amazing technologies, but we in doing that, we have an expectation that people are already using confidently a cane or a guide dog to get out and about. And you know, it turns out that a lot of people don't have that level of confidence. A lot of people need some more help. They're still very much reliant on sighted assistance pretty much for everything that they do, especially people who lose their sight later in life. So there's a real need for, you know, how do we address the needs of people who need more help? And we really, through the research that I've done and explored different options, concluded that we need something that is physically connected to the ground and guides the person. And that's led us to the evolution of this kind of device that's easiest in the world to use. You hold the handle, you just walk, and it guides the way. It's as familiar as holding onto someone's elbow or a harness of a guide dog.
So would this be suitable for somebody who's typically a cane user? I use a long cane, and you know, I always think of the cane as a scanner to explore the area around me, you know, and sighted people, they see you sort of tap into something and they go, oh my gosh, he's going to walk into that or whatever. And it's like, no, actually, now I'm safe because I know where I am and I know where the edge of the curb is or the bus stop or whatever it is, right? And so sometimes I think the experience for a guide dog user is a little different. The guide dog, you know, takes you quickly from A to B and avoids the obstacles. So this seems to sit somewhere in between both of those experiences. Is that fair?
I think it's a beautiful description. What we're doing, first of all, is providing another option for people, right? I mean, you can continue to use your cane, and when you prefer to use Glide for certain scenarios, then you take Glide with you, yeah? So I don't think these are one or the other. People can choose how to combine them. From our experience, cane users have been very quick to learn how to use Glide. You still feel the ground because the wheels are very tactile and you still feel some of the texture of the ground. With the camera, Glide can also provide some additional information with descriptions. And if you really want to, you can you can hold your cane in the other hand and tap around and feel other things that are in the environment. So I don't think it necessarily has to be one, you know, exclusively right. one or the other.
You're not looking to put guide dogs or canes out of business. You just want to provide a different solution where somebody might find that one of those existing ones perhaps isn't working for them.
I think what we are seeing is that there is a great need, and as you probably noticed in the excitement at CSUN this week, right, that people are responding to this in a very positive way, and it does address a need. You know, so there's a lot of people who just don't have that level of confidence, and they feel that with this kind of device it's going to give them, like, you know, some people also who have used a guide dog are a little bit older and now don't feel that they're going to have the mileage to continue to justify a dog, but they don't have the confidence with the cane. You know, we spoke to somebody just last week. She says, you know, all I do is go to visit my sister once or twice a week, and she's like two blocks away from where I am, but I can't justify having a dog for that, but I don't have the confidence to do that with a cane.
I know sometimes when blind people are kind of between guide dogs as well, they can use their cane, but they just don't feel as independent. So maybe this helps in that scenario as well.
That's right.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you're traveling, so I have my guide dog, but often when I travel to unfamiliar hotels and places, sometimes it's more hassle for me to get organized to take the dog with me than, because the dog doesn't know where I'm going. The only way I'm going to get sighted assistance almost everywhere I go. Yeah. And I can envisage in these situations, I'll probably take Glide with me because, it's easy to go to the airport with, take it with me, and I can more easily navigate the hotel without having to find a place to take the dog out. But again, I mean, I think it's really, really important for me to emphasize, and I think we all appreciate that it's not one or the other. I think guide dogs will be here for a long time. I think canes will be here for a long time. But I also think that we'll have these intelligent devices that help many, many more people to get out and about and live a full life with independent mobility.
And where are you in terms of a roadmap, Amos? When can people see this hitting the market?
So we are currently in prototype 3. Prototype 3 was unveiled in the Consumer Electronics Show in January. And since then, we've really moved forward with the autonomous driving capabilities that are built into Prototype 3. And from here, we'll be really starting to work on the final design of the units that we will prepare for shipping. And so the way we're looking at it now is, we'll start to take pre-orders for the devices sometimes this spring. We'll get to beta devices later in 2024 and start shipping pre-order devices in 2025, hopefully the first half of 2025.
And can you give us any kind of steer on what kind of price we should expect?
So it's very important for us that Glides are devices that people can purchase. We look at it from very much as a consumer device. We want people to be able to go and purchase a device and get going. So we don't want to create significant barriers around it. So our goal is to price them in along the lines of what it costs to own a mobile phone. So you'll purchase the device. You may choose a subscription level based on the features that you want. If you're a beginner, it'll be a very basic subscription where you're getting your early stage mobility capabilities maybe around your neighborhood. And if you're one that travels the world and goes around and airports and hotels, you may have more demands from the device and be paying a higher subscription for that. But that's the range, and we'll talk about we'll be more specific on pricing when we start the pre-order program in the spring.
Excellent. Well, I'm sure the level of excitement here, if that's anything to go by, you're going to have a lot of people watching this one very, very closely indeed.
Thank you very much. And may I say, please encourage your listeners to come to our website, glidance.io, and register your interest. We'd love to have you join our Zoom calls, which we hold every month, and talk about the device and get lots of really interesting conversations about what these kind of devices mean to the community. And then, of course, people will be invited to the pre-order program as we get there.
And I also just want to thank you for the work that you did on Soundscape. And it's brilliant now that, you know, Soundscape lives on in other forms, in other apps, but that the concept is alive and well and still being used around the world. Thank you for your contribution, Amos. We do appreciate it. So glidance.io is where you can learn more.
That's right, glidance.io. That's glidance.io. And thank you so much for the opportunity and for the warm words, David. It means a lot to me. Soundscape has been a very important development for me. To understand the needs and the opportunity to enhance people's awareness of their surroundings as they get out and about. And as my wife always says, it's going to be Glide and Soundscape together. That's going to be the ultimate solution. We'll see.
Amos Miller, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much, sir.
That's all we've got time for this week. It's been another busy one. Do join us again next week, where Dave Williams will be back with us. Normal service will be resumed. If you've got any thoughts on anything that you've heard in today's programme, or any of the CSUN stuff, or even those IRA trials, do get in touch and let us know your thoughts. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. You can send us an email, or you can attach a voice message, and we will play that out and get you on air. But for now, from myself, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Babalkovich, and the rest of the Tech Talk team, bye for now.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.